Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and, well, with us tonight is a special guest. He's been with us many times before. He's one of my favorite guests, Pastor David Whitney of the Institute of the Constitution. David, thank you so very much for being with us.
Having me on your show.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you here. And yeah, I just wanted to talk very, very briefly about and get your views on the recent Supreme Court decision. There were really two of them that came down. The first one dealt with the right of eminent domain. And, of course, eminent domain ordinarily meant that if you wanted to perhaps build a school or you wanted to build a highway and you had to take somebody's house, why, you could do that. Even if they didn't want to sell it, you would have to give them fair market value. But you had a right to do that for the good of the community. However, there was a recent decision that was made, which in essence said that local community had a right to take the property away from a landowner and give it to a developer. And, of course, the problem with that is that the developer could buy the property for the individual. He doesn't want to pay the price for it. He wants to get it for a song. It may be very valuable property, but he wants to get it at a very low price. And so he pays somebody on the local city council or offers the son-in-law, son of the city council, a good job, or who knows what sort of arrangements are made. But the city council then, in the name of the public good, simply seizes the property from one person and gives it to another, which is totally against our concepts of individual freedom. But what was so interesting about the decision was that the judges who voted to take away the property rights were basically saying it should be handled at the state. And in some respects, they were absolutely right. You see, these same judges who ordinarily want to give all power to the federal government, when they wanted to take away property rights, justified it saying, well, that's a state's rights issue. But they never talk about states' rights on so many other things. And suddenly then you have your so-called conservatives, the three main conservatives, who are saying, no, you know, the federal government, should not have the right to push the authority back to the states. We here at the federal level should be able to preserve the right of private property. And so what you end up is sort of a schizophrenic situation. And then, of course, the recent decision on the Ten Commandments, it's all right to have them outside on public property, but you can't have them inside in a courtroom. What sort of madness do we have here? And what this is basically an attack on the religious foundation of America. Our freedoms come from God. That's what it said in the Declaration of Independence. Our founding fathers knew that. And, of course, they want to destroy that concept, realizing full well that if they can destroy the religious foundation of this country and the concept that our freedoms come from God, then where do they come from? Why, they come from men. And if they come from men, they can be taken away by men. David, let's get your comments on these issues, and then we'll get to whatever we're going to talk about tonight, about our matchless Constitution and how we're losing it.
Well, consider Article 5 of, Fifth Amendment, most people call it, but Article 5 of the Bill of Rights says that no person is to be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for a public use without just compensation. You can underline that term, just compensation. That means the person can only have their property taken in an eminent domain type of setting if there is a justified use and if they are paid a just amount for that property. In other words, the fair market value, not a determined price set by any governmental agency, but basically the price set by the market. So what we have taken place is the Supreme Court...
Go right ahead there, David.
Okay, the Supreme Court, in a strange way, like you say, is flipped. The conservatives are liberal on this point, and the liberals are saying they're conservative. They'd send it back to the states. But the point of the fact is, our federal government requires each state government to abide by similar rules. That, in other words, the states cannot violate the taking of people's property any more than the federal government can violate this principle. And so for them to turn it back to the states is really to be avoiding the issue. They want the theft of people's property to be legal, and they're just finding an excuse around a real issue that they should deal with and say, no, you cannot do this. You cannot take a person's property because supposedly there's going to be a greater tax yield from that developer than from the individual who currently owns the property. When you consider what our founders said in the Declaration, the very purpose for governments being instituted in the first place was to protect our God-given rights, one of which, one very primary important one, is property. The initial drafts of the Declaration said life, liberty, and property, and then property was expanded to say life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, but that phrase, pursuit of happiness, always incorporated the idea of ownership of property. And now we have a government that is doing the exact opposite for which our government was instituted, to protect a person's right to own property. And, of course, this is only one tip of the iceberg. All over the country, these sort of cases are going forward. And, of course, now that it's reached the Supreme Court and gone through a 5-4 decision there, it means a precedent has been set. And the government everywhere all over our country is going to begin stealing your property. So look out, citizens. The government's coming after your property. It is a government that has now become illegitimate on the very terms that our form of government was established as a Declaration of Independent States.
But, of course, the argument on the other side is that, according to the 45th of the Federalist Papers, the right to, dealing with life, liberty, and property were to be maintained by the states. The powers of the central government were to be limited and defined, very specifically limited and defined, and certainly the federal government couldn't take your property, but matters dealing with life, liberty, and property would be maintained at the state level. So that would be their justification for saying this should be returned to the states. Now, what bothers me is once the federal government has established that precedent, will any state court then dare to go against that precedent? Then, even though there's no justification for the state taking property either, why it seems that they are quite willing to do that. We'll be back in just a moment here with David Whitney. I think what they've done is confuse the American people. They've done it intentionally, with the liberals taking the right position, the conservatives the unjust position. Well, anyway, this is a confusing issue. How would you counter that idea that this really should be a state issue, not a federal issue?
Well, actually, it should be an issue that the people in the state refuse to tolerate. That is, they line up and say, we are not going to allow elected officials to do this. We're going to remove them from office. We don't even have to bother impeaching them. Most states have a process by which you can recall elected officials. You did it there in California a while back with the governor. That should take place in that state, as they should recall those city officials that have pushed this forward, and they should teach a lesson to these wicked officials that they dare not steal anyone's property. And basically, though, it will take a revolution on the part, well, I should say a revolution, but a reaffirmation of the foundational principles. And this, again, is where most Americans are lacking. They think if government says it, well, we just got to do it. We may not like it, but we just got to tolerate, which is not at all the principle upon which we were founded.
We are a nation of laws, but our laws have to be based upon biblical truth, and they have to be permanent. They can't be changed every time while you get a new black-robed individual into a position of authority, because we have men there who are not answerable to God. They're not answerable to anybody. They're gods unto themselves, and this is what's so frightening. As we turn against the God of the Bible, we adopt the gods of the justice system.
And that's exactly what the other case illustrates. The only reason that they say the Ten Commandments can appear in a public place at all is if it has no religious significance whatsoever. That's a mere historic document alongside with other historic documents, just, you know, kind of giving school children an illustration of the history of the development of law. In other words, if the Ten Commandments is an irreligious document of no significance and no moral meaning whatsoever, then you can display it. It's fine. This has turned the principles of our nation upon its head, because our nation was actually founded. Most people don't recognize this or know this. If you go back to the original constitutions of the 13 states that formed the original United States. All 13 of those states incorporated the Ten Commandments as part of their legal code. That is, it was against the law to blaspheme God. It was against the law to steal, as it was against the law to murder. It was against the law to break the Sabbath. All the Ten Commandments were part of the statute law of all 13 states that formed these United States. It was not part of the statute law of the United States at the federal level, but on all the state levels, it was law. And that means that each of those states and the subsequent states that came into these United States also followed that principle. And the federal government has no business determining whether a state can acknowledge God or not acknowledge God. This is the battle that Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Alabama, Roy S. Moore, was battling. And the feds stepped into Alabama where they had no business. If they had a governor in Alabama with half of a backbone instead of a jellyfish, he would have stood up to the feds and told them, get out of my state, you have no business touching a Ten Commandments monument in the state of Alabama. So the principle that was defeated there in Alabama now has just been taken to the next step, the Supreme Court now stripping any Ten Commandments display that really has any meaning to it. Basically they're saying, you can acknowledge God as long as you do so in vain. That is, if it means nothing whatsoever, of no religious significance, then you can do it. So they therefore break the other commandment, thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. So we have an evil judiciary, black-robed men who are just thoroughly evil. They're minions, actually, black-robed men and women, minions of Satan. They're doing Satan's work in destroying our constitutional republic and destroying the very foundation of law, which in America from the very beginning was the law of God, not the law of some black-robed lawyer.
And I really think that's such an important issue. If you look at this and try to reason what's going on today, you're going to get confused. If you understand that there is an organized effort to destroy the Judeo-Christian foundation of this country, and talk about anti-Semitism, after all, God gave Moses, who was a Jew, the Ten Commandments, and of course what they're saying is the Ten Commandments basically may not be displayed in any public building. That sounds to me like anti-Semitism. Well, I'm saying that with tongue-in-cheek, but there really is an organized effort to destroy the religious foundation of this country. The people who are involved know exactly what they're doing. And you say it's Satan's work. I believe it's Satan's work. I believe this is part of a planned program that is being directed by truly demonic forces that would destroy the religious foundation of this country as a means of destroying America. They know what they're doing. They just want the American people to understand the spiritual component of what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, we definitely face a crisis on the Constitution. And if we look at what has taken place 220-some years from the founding era to our day, we have the movement away from the absolutes based upon biblical God's law of our founders' era to a humanism and a relativism of our day in which there is no absolutes except what comes out of the most recent Supreme Court decision. The psalmist wrote in Psalm 11:3, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? And that's what we're faced with. The foundations of our nation have been destroyed. What can we do? We can rebuild those foundations. We can go back to the principles our founding fathers built this country upon and rebuild it from the ground up. Jefferson said, in questions of power, then let no more be said of confidence in man, but bind him down with the chains of the Constitution. Dr. Stan, that's the problem we face today. These Supreme Court justices should have been impeached long ago. The Supreme Court justices that voted Roe v. Wade, they should have been immediately impeached. The Supreme Court justices just a year ago in Lawrence v. Texas, they should have been impeached. But we don't have legislators with the guts or the willingness to do that.
But they don't even have to impeach them. All they have to do, the Congress could pass a law tomorrow that says no man's property may be taken under eminent domain, unless it is for a public purpose, a road or a school. And we are invoking Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution and saying the federal government, the federal judiciary, may not act on this issue. And, of course, they have the right to do that. Tom Daschle did it. repeatedly when he was the majority leader of the Senate. Time after time, the members of the Senate and members of Congress know what they can do to put an end to the tyranny of the judges, and they don't have the gumption to do it. That's the real tragedy. Oh, they're so concerned about private property. They're concerned about partial birth abortion. They're concerned about abortion. They're so concerned about all these excesses of the judges. Maybe we need a constitutional amendment. You don't need a constitutional amendment. They could do it tomorrow. And certainly George W. Bush knows that. He could put the pressure on the Congress to simply pass legislation to outlaw partial birth abortion with an appendix that restricts the power of the courts to outlaw abortion, to outlaw taking private property, to allow the Ten Commandments to be displayed any place, to allow prayer in schools, and simply put on an appendix, and it only have to have a majority of the Senate and the House to say that the Supreme Court or no other federal court can intervene. That is constitutional. We have a system of checks and balances, and certainly what we're seeing today is successive administrations, both Democrat and Republican, allowing the judicial tyranny.
And in a sense, you could say they're complicit in it. They know that most Americans don't know the Constitution well enough to know Article 3, Section 2, and therefore they don't know that the Congress has this power to rein in an out-of-control judiciary, and so they can kind of blame it on those judges, and most Americans will swallow it and say, oh, what a terrible thing. We've got these terrible Supreme Court justices, and until we get rid of them, we can't change things. So, in a sense, they're baiting Americans because Americans are ignorant of their contract with our federal government, the Constitution. Well, I like what the Honorable Robert H. Bork, who should be on the Supreme Court, he wrote in Tempting of America about what happens with the erosion of justice. In law, the moment of temptation is the moment of choice. When a judge realizes that in the case before him, his strongly held view of justice, his political and moral imperative, is not embodied in a statute or in a provision, any provision of the Constitution. He must then choose between his version of justice and abiding by the American form of government. Yet the desire to do justice, whose nature seems to him obvious, is compelling, while the concept of constitutional process is abstract, rather arid, and the abstinence it counsels unsatisfying. To give in to temptation this one time solves an urgent human problem, and a faint crack appears in the American foundation. A judge has begun to rule where a legislator should. This has gone on thousands upon thousands of times, such that we have come to a conclusion where these judges are basically God. They do whatever they want, and they're accountable to no one.
And you know,
in fact, they should be held accountable by our legislators.
And of course, the thing is that you can argue. I mean, after all, look at Terry Schiavo. Here's a woman, she's incapacitated, her life. Well, it really isn't really worth living. Maybe we ought to just let her go ahead and die. But that is not the decision that a Supreme Court justice has to make. Any decision he has to make has to do with what the law is. The same is true with abortion. And what a tragedy it is when a young woman is pregnant out of wedlock and she doesn't really want that child at all. And why should she have to go through 9 months and bear the child, even give it away? Isn't it the easy solution to just simply kill the child, the unborn child? You can always justify these positions. But it is not up to the Supreme Court justices to make those decisions. They are there to interpret the Constitution. And when, as Judge Bork says, they begin to do what they want to do rather than what they interpret the Constitution, or they try to solve social problems by amending the Constitution, this is when freedom here in America ends.
And we need people who understand these principles.
Amen to that. Well, that's what the Institute of the Constitution is all about. And when we get back, of course, we'll begin to develop the ideas. And we'll let Pastor David Whitney begin to explain to you this amazing document that we have. It is the foundation of our freedom, and we will lose our freedom unless you understand the Constitution, the beliefs of our founding fathers, the Declaration of Independence, the significance of the Bill of Rights, the Federalist Papers, and that's, of course, what they teach at the Institute of the Constitution. And if you don't understand the foundations of your freedom, how will you preserve it? We'll be back in just a moment with Pastor Whitney. Well, David, why don't you pick up from there?
Yes. Well, the thing that we need to understand is our framers' view of truth. To them, truth and law is unchanging, it's absolute, it's God-ordained, and this was derived from the biblical view of truth. After all, the word truth in the Old Testament, emes, is a fixed and unchanging standard that meets the test of time. In the New Testament, the Greek word aletheia is truth. It's identified with Jesus Christ, who is the way, the truth, and the life. And Hebrews 13 says that he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. So truth and law are unchanging. Furthermore, they understood that the research done by scientists like Sir Isaac Newton, who, by the way, was a Christian, most people don't realize he was a devout Christian who wrote extensively on Bible prophecy and all, and in his research he discovered laws of the universe that were fixed and absolute God-ordained laws, the laws of motion and mathematics and gravity and chemistry and physics, etc., and that these, in a sense, physical laws of the universe are parallel to the moral laws of the universe that God gave for the governance of man. A summary of those moral laws, of course, is the Ten Commandments itself. Now, derived from this view also was the legal and political thinkers that influenced our founders. We've talked before about Blackstone and Montesquieu and Locke. All of these taught that man's laws must conform to the revealed law of Scripture, God's Word, the Bible, the law of nature. The law of nature's God, and these were given by God himself to mankind for our good. And so any society that follows God's law is going to experience his blessing. Any society that rejects God's law is going to bring down the curses of God upon that society. And we have begun to do that in abortion and these other evils like sodomy that has been promoted in our culture. So the framers believed that the Constitution, therefore, was to be interpreted according to a fixed standard, that its plain meaning was to be interpreted not by some crazy judge and whatever he thinks. No, it was to be interpreted by the intent of those who drafted and ratified it. You need to go back to the founding era and understand what they said. James Madison, who's rightly called the father of our Constitution, said, "If the sense in which the Constitution was accepted and ratified by the nation be not the guide in expounding it, there can be no security for a faithful exercise of its powers." That's exactly what we have today. The government, president, Congress, the Supreme Court, they are not faithfully exercising the powers granted to them in the Constitution. They're unfaithful, they're violating it, and they're corrupting it. Jefferson likewise said, "The Constitution on which our Union rests shall be administered by me," he was president at the time, "administered by me according to the safe and honest meaning contemplated by the plain understanding of the people of the United States at the time of its adoption." All of our founders said, if you're going to be just and right, you're going to follow the original intent of the Constitution, not some new concocted idea, but the original intent. And if you don't like the original intent, you think they made some mistakes somewhere, fine. There's a process of changing it, and that process is one of amendment. George Washington said, "If in the opinion of the people the distribution or modification of the constitutional powers be at any particular wrong, let it be corrected by an amendment in the way the Constitution designates. But let there be no change by usurpation. Though this may in one instance be the instrument of good, it is the customary weapon by which free governments are destroyed." And that's what we see taking place today, Dr. Stan. Our government is being destroyed by those in power, whether
hold that thought, yeah, or legislators. Well, Pastor Whitney was just saying that certainly George Washington admonished us against trying to do good. People who say, gee, we could solve this problem if we just sort of change the laws of the United States. And yet, of course, there's a means of doing that. It's by the process of amendment. And George Washington then went on to say that this is how governments are destroyed, when people are trying to do good, and of course they begin to change the framework of our society, and it doesn't matter whether this one instance you say is a good idea, you think it's a good idea, you need to amend the Constitution, not have simply judicial tyranny, saying, well, we, a majority of the Supreme Court, think this is a good idea. I heard this expressed today when this fellow said, talking about how we really had to certainly take religion out of public institutions. And he said, I mean, if you were a Buddhist, this man is a good Buddhist, and he's going to a college, and everybody stands up for a prayer, and he doesn't believe in a Christian prayer. I mean, why should he have to do that? And how would you respond? Of course, this is used as a justification for taking a prayer out of any schools and out of courts, and certainly any mention of Christianity or the Ten Commandments out of our public places. After all, this man is a Buddhist, and he doesn't believe in those, and he's living here. He's become a citizen. So why, you know, isn't this offensive to him? Are we taking away his rights by forcing him to stand up and say a prayer?
Well, if you go to a Buddhist country that is truly ruled by Buddhist principles, you will not have any freedom or any liberty. Go to a Hindu country truly ruled by Hindu principles, likewise. Go to an Islamic country, you will not have any freedom. It's only Christianity that grants true freedom to individuals. And a Buddhist has freedom to come here and express his religion, but he does not have the freedom to change our form of government. He does not have the freedom to take away the free expression of Christianity. Our founders are very clear. They designed the First Amendment not to give advance to Buddhism or Mohammedism, which is the other term for Islam that they used in that day, or even Hinduism. It was only to permit Christianity to have a favored position, because they recognized only Christianity produces the type of freedom and liberty that our country was founded upon. You destroy that foundation and you destroy everything else. So non-Christians have all the freedom and all the rights here, but they do not have the freedom and right to change the basic foundation of our nation or of our institutions, the education institution being primarily one of them. And they're welcome to stay in their own country if they like their Buddhist system of government or their Hindu system or Islamic system of government. But if they come to these United States, our founder said, this is a Christian nation. You're free to come here, but you're not free to change our institutions, nor free to change our foundation upon which we were founded. We are a Christian nation. Very clearly, even the Supreme Court up to 1952 stated, this is a Christian nation founded upon Christian principles. And if you change that, which is what's happened since 1952, you no longer have a Christian nation, and you begin to lose the basic freedoms, the basic liberties that our Creator has given us, the liberty for life. Well, abortion and now euthanasia are legal. The liberty to own property. Now the government is free to steal your property any time it chooses. Life, liberty, and property are disappearing. And we are losing those because we have left the foundation our founders established this nation upon. And that is the biblical understanding of law and government. And that's, you know, basically what our course teaches people, a working understanding of the founding documents, but particularly working understanding of our founding fathers' view of law and government, which is a biblical view. And so we offer a host kit which enables anyone, anywhere, with any group to really communicate these principles without having to be an expert themselves. There's 12 lectures by Dr. Eidsmo and a very detailed outline in a notebook for each student. The host, we say you're not teaching it, just hosting it, but the host has a detailed set of instructions about how to conduct each of those lectures, so they have the answers to all the test questions and review questions and so on, so that anybody can really communicate these truths. And I found it fascinating, Dr. Stan, we've had people who are not Christians, people who are Buddhists or atheists, secular humanists and so forth, come through our class here in Pasadena, and they may not have become Christians, but they came away with an entirely different understanding of what our country was about. They recognized that their freedom to be an atheist or, you know, whatever religion they might be, their freedom was based upon a Christian foundation, and they dare not touch and try to change that foundation, because if they do, their freedom will be lost, as well as the Christian's freedom lost as well.
And of course, the Christian is losing his freedom today because people do not understand what the wicked people are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we've forgotten that admonition by William Penn. Those who will not be ruled by God will be ruled by tyrants. Look and see what's happening today and understand how we're losing our freedom and why. We'll be back in just a moment here with Pastor David Whitney as we explore this story of America's godly heritage. Well, David, go right ahead and pick up the story from there.
Well, let me just give people our phone number if they'd like to order.
Let's give that out when we get back, because right now we only have our internet listeners.
Sure, okay.
And I want all of our listeners to know that. But you can give the number out now, and we'll give it out again when we get all of our stations back with us.
Okay, it's 866-730-9796. And we'll repeat that a little bit later on. Well, from our founder's era of absolute biblical standards, a changing view of truth began to be popularized. Jean-Jacques Rousseau, who was part of a terrible bloodbath known as the French Revolution, he rejected the concept of sin, and he stressed the goodness of man, and he blamed human institutions for the existence of evil. Irrational at its core, because human institutions are formed by what? Humans. So where did the sin come from if all men are good? Anyway, he, along with others, promoted this evil view of things, and Friedrich Hegel was another philosopher in Germany who did a great deal to destroy the concept of unchanging truth. He rejected the concept of absolutes. He believed that truth evolved from age to age, and he believed that it evolved by a process he called dialectic. And if you know anything about Marxism, it's based on this dialectic. It's the thesis, an idea is proposed, and then the antithesis, the opposite of it, is proposed, and then a synthesis, some kind of compromise between the two. And so a three-step process, one step forward, one step back, and then another step in between, and you've got the change that he proposed was what happened in the process of truth changing and evolving from age to age.
Sort of like the conflict between capitalism and communism, mm-hmm. then coming up with sort of a socialist government, and then, of course, you have another thesis, which would be socialism, and you'd have the antithesis, which would be maybe anarchy, and then you'd come up with really, of course, it all ends up with a fascist society. Mm-hmm. That's what they really want. It's a process of changing our society, and the foundation of this is the dialectic put forward by Hegel, which was the basis of communism, and certainly these same philosophies were very accepted within the Nazi movement as well.
Right. Well, another thinker, Auguste Comte, he was the father of a religion. He called his new religion positivism, and it said the only meaningful truth is that which can be empirically verified. That is, with your five senses, if you can smell it, taste it, and so forth, you can put it in a test tube and experiment on it, That truth is meaningful. All other truth is absolutely irrelevant, which means concepts such as divine law, natural rights, natural law, human dignity, human equality, all these things became irrelevant in his religion that he pushed upon the world. Of course, Charles Darwin popularized biological evolution, and that was extended to every area of research and thought by Herbert Spencer. Who
Hold that thought right there. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, our guest this evening is Pastor David Whitney, and he's basically going into the background of so much of what's going on today, pointing out that the philosophy of Hegel, this idea of having two forces in conflict, advancing new ideas, and here we would have the idea of, say, of socialism and, of communism and capitalism in conflict, and coming up with a new alternative, which would be socialism. And then, of course, you would have the socialism become one of those ideas in conflict, maybe with international terrorism. Our socialist government in conflict with the terrorists, and what would be the new solution? Why world government? Something of that sort. And then, of course, we go from there to Kant, and then we go to Darwin, the idea of evolution, carried forward not only evolution of the species, but evolution of government and ideas. So this is where we are today. All of these philosophies of the past impacting on where we are today. Before Pastor Whitney goes on, I want him to give the telephone number so those of you out there in the listening audience can get in touch with the Institute of the Constitution and learn more about this wonderful Constitution we have, which is the very foundation of our freedom, which is not taught in our schools today, is not taught in law schools. Certainly, very few members of our either the House of Representatives or the United States Senate have ever studied the Constitution or understand that much of what they're doing is in violation of the oath that they've taken to uphold. In fact, in my one meeting with George W. Bush, when we asked him if he would sign a bill that was unconstitutional, then Governor George W. Bush said, "I don't understand the question." And so we repeated the question. If you were given a bill on education that was unconstitutional, would you sign it? He'd said, I'm going to have to think about that. So, anyway, that's where we are today. Why don't you get a little bit in the background of how people can get in touch with you and the Institute?
They can order a host kit if they, and we hope they are concerned about taking our nation back from the pagan view that's destroying us. They can order by going to our website, iotconline.com. That's iotconline.com. Or they can call us toll-free if they'd like at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. And as the ideas we've been talking about began to filter in, they made a particular impact through Harvard's Law School with their Christopher Columbus Langdell as the dean leading the charge to change law, to make law meet this idea that it evolves and is changing and is not a fixed standard. In other words, he held the opposite view of our founding fathers, who said law is fixed and it's unchanging. He said, no, law evolves, and the persons that evolve the law, the persons who are the engine of change, are the judges, because the judges, with each opinion they write, are evolving and changing the law. Therefore, he said, rather than go back and study standards, as William Blackstone and our founding fathers did, he said, you have to study the cases and the opinions issued by each judge, because those opinions tell you where the current evolution of the law is at. And therefore, we see that, you know, a number of years ago in the 60s, there was all this talk about civil rights and so forth and so on, and now we have gay rights. Well, that's an evolution of the law, according to these people's perverted thinking. The result is a living constitution, the view that judges are not bound by the intent of the framers, but are rather free to give new meanings to the Constitution, even invent new rights that never existed in the original Constitution. And so these judges feel free to create a new right like abortion. Our founders would have said there's no right to abortion anywhere in the Constitution, and there's no right to homosexual sodomy. 10 years ago they said no right to homosexual sodomy in the Constitution, but they evolved over the next 10 years, and so in Lawrence v. Texas they said, oh yeah, now there is a right to homosexual sodomy in the Constitution. They believe in this living, breathing garbage, and that's why we have the evil being advanced by the judges in our day. Now there's great dangers, and anybody that talks to you about a living constitution, you ought to ask them some questions. Because a living constitution, under that approach, no human rights are ever secure. The same court that read into the constitution rights that didn't exist, like abortion or homosexual sodomy, they can read out of the constitution rights that are there, like property rights, which we were just discussing earlier. They read that right out of the constitution and said, no, it doesn't exist anymore. Or your right to a contract, or your right to free exercise of religion, or your right to keep and bear arms. All these things that are clearly in the Constitution today, tomorrow they may be gone because a black robe lawyer has determined this living, breathing Constitution will take them away from you. So there's no guarantee that history always moves upward towards greater recognition of human rights and human dignity and equality. In fact, if you look at history, you really see the opposite. Generally, societies are spiraling downward and becoming less just, and there's less recognition of human rights and greater barbarism, such as we saw in the last century on this planet was the bloodiest century the world has ever known. Why? Barbarism has increased more than ever. Furthermore, there's no guarantee that judges are always more enlightened than the average citizen, or more forward-looking, or have a greater ability to establish human equality, human rights. Much of history shows the exact opposite, because Nazi Germany could never have done the evil that they did without judges supporting it all the way. And judges often have been well behind, long behind what generally the public understand to be just and right. Just as today, there's this hue and cry across the country, how can they let government steal personal property, private property? The judges are wrong, and most Americans know that is the case. You see, a fixed standard of the Constitution is a far better guarantee of human rights than any evolving standard made by some black robe lawyer. Further, the danger of a living Constitution leads to big government. Strained interpretations that have twisted and distorted the phrases of the Constitution, phrases such as the General Welfare Clause, the Interstate Commerce Clause, the Necessary and Proper Clause, the Contract Clause, the Due Process Clause, all of these the courts have used and twisted the original intent to mean the opposite of what it actually meant, and they've opened the door to vast expansions of the size and scope of government at all levels. Most Americans recognize that we've got a monster of a government that now is spying on us, a monster of the government that is not to be trusted. As Reagan said a number of years ago, it's a joke when somebody says, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. Right. Nobody believes that. We know that that monster bureaucracy is dangerous to our liberties. It's going to take those liberties from us. So a big government doesn't give safety to anyone except the bureaucrats and the judges who are in control of it. Further, if the state is the highest authority, that is, if there is no divine authority above the state, then there is no such thing as an illegitimate or unjust law. Whatever the government says or whatever the black robe lawyer says has to be just because it came out of the mouth of a black robe lawyer or out of the mouth of some government official. This, of course, leads to judicial tyranny under the thumb of judges who do whatever they please that are accountable to no one. It's interesting, our founding father, Alexander Hamilton, argued that the judiciary was the least dangerous branch of government because its powers were simply limited to interpreting the Constitution and laws. So he said there's no way that they can... He was very short-sighted because we instead have the opposite. It is the most dangerous branch of government in our day. And some justices have admitted this. Justice Felix Frankfurter admitted what governs is the Constitution and not what we have written about it. In his day, there was a debate about that. And current Chief Justice William Rehnquist has said that no amount of repetition of historical errors in judicial opinions can make the errors true. He understood. The errors made by the Supreme Court don't make them true. So if judges are not bound by a fixed standard of the plain meaning of the Constitution according to the intent of our framers, they are free to do whatever they choose, and that's exactly what we're suffering under today.
I certainly agree with you, and I think that it's so important for people to understand that we had a system of checks and balances, not only between the executive and judicial and the legislative at the national level, but between the federal government and the states, and between the states and the counties, and between the counties and the cities. We divided power so it could never be centralized. And look and see what we're happening today. While we're moving towards all power in Washington, D.C., they want a federal police force. They want dossiers on all the people in the name of fighting terrorism. They want everybody to have an ID card. Of course, we're going to call it a state-issued driver's license. But the government will have your picture on file and your thumbprint on file and your iris scan on file and your DNA on file. And they're collecting information on everything you buy, and on your health, on your bank account, on where you work. If you are a young person, they want you on file because they want to draft you and send you overseas to fight the interminable laws. How did we get to where we are? Why the people forgot that liberty and limited government were synonymous, and that tyranny and total government were synonymous. And our founding fathers wanted to limit the power of government because that was the only way that people could be free.
Well, the solution, Dr. Stan, is for us to get back to the Constitution as interpreted by the framers themselves. And the only way we can do that is to study it and understand it, which is why Institute on the Constitution has put together our 12-week host kit. It'll give people a working knowledge of the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and as you said earlier, they will have a better understanding than more than 90% of the officials in Washington, D.C., or their officials in their own state capital, because our founders had a biblical worldview of law and government, and even many who call themselves Christians who are in government today do not have that biblical worldview, and we need to get back to teaching millions of Americans these basic understanding, back to the biblical principles our framers held, and then we need to put out of office every single office holder who will not uphold the framers' original intent for our form of government. Basically, we have a contract. Our Constitution, you can see, is a contract with our government. We created the government by this contract. The terms of the contract give the government certain things it can do and many things that it cannot do. And if we, the people, don't know that contract, then we cannot hold our elected officials accountable to the terms of the contract. Can you imagine having a contract to, I don't know, purchase a car, and you're going to pay over 40 months so much per month and such and such an interest rate. And one month it's 5% interest, and the next month the car company says, well, we're going to make it 10%. You'd scream. You'd say, no, I have a contract. You just violated the contract. I'm going to drag you into court and sue you for the terms of this contract that you have violated. Well, when the government violates its contract with us, we have a hard time because it runs the court system. We're going to haul it into court and sue it. It's very difficult to do. The only way we can hold it accountable is if we know the terms of the contract, and then we throw the bums out of office who refuse to abide by the terms of the contract. That's their promise when they take an oath of office, to abide by the terms of the contract. And we, the people, got to hold them accountable to it. And if we don't, we lose the freedom, and it's our fault.
Amen to that. Well, we'll take calls. I know a couple of people have been calling in and wanted to talk to you, but I wanted, of course, to get your ideas out. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you'd like to call in. And let's go to Ray, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. Did you have a question for our guest?
Yeah. Dave, do you think that George W. Bush really believes in the Bible at all?
I doubt it.
Here's a man that said that the Bible was a pretty good political handbook. He said that.
I doubt it for several reasons, Ray. One, that he claims that the God of the Bible is the same as the God of the Quran, Allah. He's got to be, I just can't imagine anybody could have even read one sentence of the Bible and come to such an idiotic conclusion.
Yeah.
Another thing is, I don't know if you remember a number of years ago when he visited Japan, he went into Shinto shrine, which is a religion, and he worshipped in that Shinto shrine. When it's very interesting, the Constitution of Japan did not permit I'm trying to remember his position, the president who was accompanying him to even enter that shrine, because that shrine was dedicated to the spirit, the dead spirit of the emperor, who was ultimately responsible for the attack on America in World War II.
Yeah.
So I doubt that he's a Christian. I think he's playing a game because he recognizes he does not have the support he needs if he does not have evangelical Christians behind him.
Well, I think the man should be impeached as soon as possible, and I think that the Downing Street memos clearly show that he lied to the American people, he lied to Congress about Iraq. Just innumerable amount of things that he should be impeached for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it should be done right away, because if we wait much longer to have him, force him to resign, I think we could be really, really terrible trouble.
Well, yeah,
you can't get rid of him.
He's forcing upon us the new world order.
Yeah.
I think that one of the things you have to understand, Ray, is that what is going on in Iraq is partly a diversion, so we will not see what's happening here at home.
Mm-hmm.
And as our boys fight for freedom overseas,
yeah,
we are losing our freedom
here
at home.
Yeah.
Amen. Thanks for calling.
Yeah,
let's go to Roger, who's calling back again from Allentown. Roger, do you have a question for Pastor Whitney?
Yes, thank you. Another wretched question is, even the so-called strict constructionists like Thomas and I forget who else in that...
B.S. Scalia and Rehnquist.
In the eminent domains taking case, I take it that none of their positions was per se, that wasn't a matter of federal purview.
Right.
Correct?
Right.
They all accorded a legitimacy to the role of the federal supremes, yes?
Right. So even the most conservative, quote-unquote, are not constitutional in the original intent of the Constitution to have limited powers granted to the federal government and much greater powers to the state government. You're right.
Unfortunately, the result kind of puts them in the same camp with the liberal land grabbers.
Yes, which is tragic, which means we have no one really defending our God-given rights, which the Declaration of Independence says, if you're suffering under a government that refuses to grant you your God-given right to life, liberty, and property, you have another God-given right, and that is to abolish that government or to change that government. And that's exactly what they did with King George III.
I mean, of course, the thing is that the Patriot Act says that anybody who wants to change our form of government is a terrorist. Well, I would think that the people in the Supreme Court and the people in Congress, they would be, by that definition, terrorists. They are trying to change our form of government from the constitutional republic we are into a centralized authoritarian society. So by the very definition of the Patriot Act, we know who the real terrorists are.
That's right.
Anything else, Rich?
God bless.
God bless.
Thank you.
Okay, well, I think it's so vitally important that people understand that there is an organized effort to change America. It is not happening by accident. It's well-financed by great tax-exempt foundations and many of our corporations, and certainly by many of our people of great wealth. Because they're energized, I believe, by powerful, powerful spiritual forces. And these people worship a different God. They've been well rewarded for turning their back on the God of the Bible, for their intense hatred of Christianity and everything Christianity stands for. And, of course, if you do embrace the dark side, you'll be well rewarded here with wealth and power and recognition and sex and drugs and all of these things. But in the final analysis, of course, each one of us one day will have to stand before the bar of judgment and answer for what we've done here on Earth. So I really feel very sorry for these people who have betrayed the heritage of America and, of course, have embraced this idea of a new world order and a new world religion. Well, I guess this evening, Pastor David Whitney. David, we've got 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program.
You know, the hope for me is that the thousands of people across the country who are taking this course and showing it to their churches or putting it on in a community center or just in their own home, inviting friends and neighbors and families, so that there's a grassroots movement going on across the nation where people are waking up to the reality. What our founding fathers designed is a far cry from what's being foisted upon us today. And as those citizens wake up, in a sense like the Minutemen there at Lexington and Concord, they say, there's a battle. The Redcoats, they're not coming. They've already conquered. And they think they're in charge, and we can turn them back. And people have sometimes said, well, you know, it's too late. It's not too late. It's not too late because the Constitution of the United States is still the supreme law of the land. It's being treated as if it's not the supreme law of the land, but that's only because Americans have not risen up and said, enough. We're not going to tolerate the violation of our contract with the federal government any longer. We're only going to permit people to go into office if they themselves know the Constitution, and if they don't know the Constitution, they're disqualified from office right there. If they do know the Constitution and are willing to uphold it, then we will put them in that precious position of trust. I think you quoted William Penn earlier, that men choose to be governed by God or condemn themselves to be governed by tyrants. That's exactly the view that our founding fathers said. And so I encourage your listeners to get a host kit. It's very simple to do. Anybody can do this and gather a group of people. Churches are a prime place to do this. I encourage people to go to their pastor and ask them, you know, we're to teach, according to Scripture, the whole counsel of God, including what God's Word says about law and government and economics, and this course does that, and it can be easily done in any church. And if they go to our website, iotconline.com, that's iotconline.com, or if they call us at our toll-free number, 866-730-9796, that's 866-730-9796, we'd be glad to set them up and get them started as they can help take back America from the tyrants who are currently in control. And if we don't do it, Dr. Stan, if we don't do it, they're coming after us next. You know, Terry Schiavo's an example. You don't have the right to life anymore in America. The poor bloke up there in New London, Connecticut, he's another example. You don't have the right to your property any longer. And the Patriot Act has said you do not have a right to liberty any longer. We can take your liberty from you anytime we choose. If we don't stand up to the tyrants, they will take all of the ground that we yield to them. And we must not yield any more ground to them. We must stand as they did at Lexington and Concord.
Hold that thought for just a moment. Let's go quickly to Rick calling from Wisconsin. Rick, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I just had a quick comment. I understand I don't have much time. I was just on RealNet Daily, and there is a developer that wants to have the property of David Souter condemned so that he can build a resort there.
Yes, and that's an interesting twist on it, although, in a sense, he's using eminent domain for the wrong you know, yeah. he's following the same suit, but he's making a good point by his attempt that, hey, we ought to steal the property from these Supreme Court justices as they have permitted others to steal from the private citizens.
Well, Rick, it sounds like a great idea, but don't hold your breath. God bless.
Okay.
Thanks so much for calling. Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, David, I want to thank you so very much for being with us.
Well, thank
Our
you,
guest
David.
Has been Pastor David Whitney from the Institute of the Constitution. One more time, your telephone number and your website.
Telephone number is 866-730-9796, and our website is iotconline.com.
God bless. Thanks very
God
much
bless
for being
you.
With us. And, of course, the Institute of the Constitution does support Radio Liberty, and we support them because we think they're doing a wonderful job of educating people all across America. And this is the important thing. You're not alone. All across America, these groups are meeting. People are beginning to learn the Constitution. The Constitution, which was taken out of our, any real understanding of it, was taken out of our schools long ago. They don't teach you that the whole idea of the Constitution was to limit the power of the central government. Well, we do carry a very interesting book. It's called So Help Me God, written by Judge Roy Moore. We recommend this book because it will give you insight into the thinking of Judge Roy Moore, who had the courage to stand up and say, I believe a public official has the right to acknowledge God. And that's what the case was all about. It really wasn't even about the Ten Commandments. It was about the fact that Judge Roy Moore said a public official has the right to acknowledge God. And the people who hate God in our country, exemplified by William Pryor, who incidentally was the man who destroyed Judge Roy Moore, and was rewarded by the current administration, by the current Christian administration, by having William Pryor appointed to the federal bench, given an interim appointment. In other words, when Congress wasn't in session, why they put him in, because Congress wouldn't vote him in. So he got an interim appointment, and now, of course, he's set for life. He, of course, is now a federal judge, rewarded for destroying Judge Roy Moore, who said, I believe I have an obligation to acknowledge God. We live in a country gone mad, and there are only a few of us who understand what's happening. We hope many of you out there in the listening audience will go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. That you'll consider getting my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, that's the latest May newsletter, which is the occult hierarchy. And there's an occult hierarchy that rules our country, that rules the world. And, of course, really, most people do not understand who they are. They don't understand that every judge on the Supreme Court who's voting the wrong way was appointed by a president who was either a Mason, associated with Masonry, or associated with a secret occult society that has all sorts of swastikas on its on the walls of their meeting house. It's called the Tomb at Yale University. I'm referring to Skull and Bones. Every one of the judges that's doing the wrong thing was appointed by a president who was a Mason, affiliated with Masonry, and this is covered in our latest newsletter. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And please tell other people about our programs. It's your job to get them listening. We hope, of course, that many of you will consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and join us in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation under God can long endure. And we'll be back here in just a moment or two. For those of you who are listening, who are leaving us, we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for our leaders and ministers, but please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And we'll be back here in just a moment or two for the next hour of Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I'm going to ask our producer to call my engineer, who could perhaps look on my computer and get the guest. We may have the wrong number for our caller, our prepared guest. And so they can probably look his number up on my computer, and hopefully we'll be able to get him. Our regularly prepared guest this evening was Bob Chapman, who writes the International Forecaster, and a fascinating summary of what goes on. It comes out every week. It's about 30 to 40 pages long, covering all the details of what's happening financially in this country, this unfolding saga of what's taking place. What the American people really do not understand is that there is an organized effort to destroy the economy of the United States, to lower the living standards of our people, to destroy the sovereignty of this country, and of course to impoverish our people. Now, this is being carried out. It's taking fairly slowly. If you have a good job and you've got your regular salary, well, that's fine. But more and more people are losing their jobs they've had for 5, 10, 15, 20 years or more. And many people, of course, are retired now. They're looking forward to their pension. They think it's going to give them some security. But so many of the pension funds are really underfunded. There's really no money behind them. And it's invested in the stock market. And when the stock market heads south, which I believe it's going to do, why, many of these pension funds will simply be wiped out. And then they'll have to turn them over to the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation, a government agency that is going to, be absolutely certain that no person loses out on their government benefits. The only trouble is the Pension Benefit Corporation, Guarantee Corporation, Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation doesn't have any money. The only money it has is what it either has been able to get from corporations and put into a kitty, but that money's all gone. They're about, right now, $23 billion behind, according to Bob Chapman, and why we're anticipating that that it will be even be further than that before very long. So we really want to explore these ideas, and hopefully we're going to be able to develop some ideas. Hopefully we'd be able to find Bob Chapman, get him on the line here, and be able to get his expertise in this field. But we find many of our major corporations, like General Motors. General Motors is moving its operation to China. Now it's not telling the people in this country. It's certainly not broadcasting this, but it's moving its factories over to China, and it's not going to be building cars to sell to the Chinese people. It's going to be building cars primarily to sell here in the United States. But they're not going to tell the people working in the factories in Detroit and in the Midwest what the plan is, although they're progressively laying off more and more of their employees. I think they're laying off something like 25,000 people here in the next year or so. And they're planning then on, of that 25,000 people, that's about 16% of their workforce. And I think that's just the beginning. I think it's only a matter of time before General Motors and Ford and all of the automotive countries simply shift out of this country into other countries. We know the BMW is opening plants in China. And why are they doing it? Well, of course, they can get all the things that they need. They can get the steel, they can get the technology, but mainly they can get the workers over there at a fraction of the prices they would have to pay for them here. And fortunately we have Bob Chapman on the line with us. Hi, Bob. How are you doing? Go ahead. Hi, Bob.
Hi.
Hi. We had a little problem getting it, but I'm glad we have you on the line. So we were just sort of talking about happening to General Motors. What's your take on it? My view is that they're really beginning to shift their center of operation into China because there's no way that they can compete with cars coming in from China, produced in China.
Well, that's right. And the Chinese will be sending 300,000 cars a year starting in 2007 to the United States. And as you've known from other programs we've been on and other things that I've written, that the offshoring by General Motors and Ford both began back in the early 1980s. And so this is nothing new. And it's affecting the entire automotive industry. All the suppliers are in serious trouble. And I see today that Lear, which makes a number of things, including interiors for vehicles, is laying off 7,700 people. And they're shipping most of those people's jobs to other countries. So that kind of fits in what you were just talking about. And, of course, their credit rating has dropped just like GM and Ford has, which means they're going to have to pay 13 or 14% to borrow money in the future to finance what they're doing. But 7,700 jobs in the United States and Europe, two-thirds of them coming from the U.S., is quite a bit. And it's just more and more our government does nothing about the destruction of the American economy.
Well, I think what's so interesting is that it's not simply the factory jobs that are going overseas, but it's the computer jobs and even some of the CEOs. Some of the, you can hire a CEO in India for a fraction of what you can get a chief operating engineer here in the United States. And these are very well trained. They're very well educated people who can do just as good a job and as an American executive at a fraction of the price.
Well, I have in my up-and-coming issue commentary by a number of great Americans about free trade and globalization. Of course, it wasn't called globalization in those days, back to the last 200 years. But the bottom line is what these great Americans said, many of them presidents, was that it's national suicide to have free trade. You have to protect your own markets, and if you don't, it's over.
All right, hold on. We'll be back here in just a moment with Bob Chapman of the International Forecasting. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapman, the International Forecaster. And Bob was simply saying that prominent people, presidents in the past, over the past 200 years, have said, you know, unless you want to commit national suicide, you protect your own market. Certainly, the Chinese are protecting their markets. They're not, I mean, they'll let people in, but they're going to control what's done. Other countries control their markets, and America is intent upon redistributing the wealth of this country, and there is a plan to do that. It's laid out in something called the Earth Charter, which is being circulated throughout the world. The document is contained in something called the Ark of Hope. It was written by the former dictator of Russia, Gorbachev. Marie Strong, who is a multi-billionaire, closely affiliated with the Rockefellers, by Dr. Stephen Rockefeller, Professor Stephen Rockefeller, who is the son of Nelson Rockefeller. And they have come up with a new program that calls for the redistribution of the wealth of this country. They're talking about redistributing your wealth out there in the radio audience, not their wealth. And people understand what is happening is not happening by accident. It's happening by intent. But they can't let the American people know that. Why, some of the people might rise up in righteous indignation and actually fire the people who are in government, get rid of the congressmen and get rid of the senators and get in people there who believe in America, who believe in our Constitution, who believe in keeping our jobs and closing our borders and protecting our economy and our future and our pensions and our elderly. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, I agree with you completely. And, you know, there was a piece of legislation that the Senate passed today. And it had to do with the energy bill. It was voted 85-12, and the House has its own version, and the Senate bill provides for $54 billion in tax incentives for oil and gas production and wind and solar energy, efficient appliances, and hybrid cars. And what's interesting is that there's no mention in any of the research I've done on the matter today of the fact that within the House bill, and of course they got to go to conference committee on the bill. There's a proposal to grant limited product liability immunity to producers of gasoline additives such as MTBE, which has been polluting the water supply and other things throughout the nation. And they failed to mention the fact that the main culprit is Chevron. And Chevron was the one that just bid for Union Oil and was outbid by the Chinese. And, you know, the corruption goes on and on and on. Here we are financing an industry that is absolutely and thoroughly loaded with money. And very little of the money that's going to be provided under this bill will go towards wind, solar, and energy-efficient appliance and hybrid cars. The whole thing is a laugher. It's another subsidy to corporate America, and it just bears out the label that I have given this administration, and others have too, and that's the George Bush and his neocons, and that is, it's corporatist fascist government. And nothing for the people, everything to subsidize the elitist internationalist corporations.
Well, I thought it was so interesting that somebody had commented, you know, we're guaranteeing loans to communist China today. We guaranteed a $5 billion loan so they could build five nuclear power plants. And of course, we guarantee this loan and that loan to the communist China. Communist China has somewhere between $600 billion and $700 billion of reserves of their own. So why do we have to guarantee loans, for communist China? They got plenty of money. Why are we guaranteeing those loans? Doesn't make any sense.
Well, it does to the internationalists, and the reason why is they are subsidizing and a possible enemy that they think they can control. And, of course, too, the amounts of money made by the middlemen, and they are those transnational corporations that are run by the elitists who run government, and what they're doing is they're moving manufacturing and service work offshore, and then they're exporting back into the United States. About 75% of what is coming into the United States from China is coming from those internationalist corporations.
I think that's just an important point, Bob, is that actually these are American corporations producing in China and shipping back to us.
Yeah, and what we should do, very simply, is impose tariffs. But not only on China, and everybody else. I mean, we have had tariffs since the beginning of this country. It's part of what made America great. Yes, I know that just after the 1929 collapse, the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act was passed. Well, number one, that did not cause the collapse in 1929. The collapse was caused by the Federal Reserve, which was supposed to be in place so that wouldn't happen. Of course, that's not the way it works, as we all know. And that bill was passed 9 months after the collapse. And then it only applied to a difference of between 40% and 50% imposts and duties. Now, to explain that more succinctly, they were already 40% duties on. They raised them to 59%, but only on a small group of goods, which only affected 1.3% of our imports from foreign countries. So it's a misnomer. These people have been after the opportunity to use free trade globalization to create a one world government, which we ought to subsidize as long as we can.
And of course, we're not going to be able to subsidize it too long. I think it's so important for people to understand the Great Depression of 1929 was created because the Federal Reserve Bank, the privately owned central bank that controls our economy, contracted the money supply. And we carry a video, I don't know if you've seen it, Bob, but it contains an interview with Milton Friedman. The video is called Phenomenon, the Money Man. But Milton Friedman says, on camera, the Great Depression was caused by the policies of the central bank of the Federal Reserve System contracting the money supply. They don't teach that in our schools. They don't teach that to economists. Most of them think it was the Smoot or Holly Bell or whatever it was, you know, and there was just too much overproduction and not enough requirement for consumption. After all, how many refrigerators could people have? They don't understand that this depression was created intentionally and purposely, and I fear that they are going to do the same thing over again. We say, oh, they're trying to keep this thing going. Well, when this thing collapses, why, heaven help us all, because what people have worked for their whole lives are going to be lost. The pensions are going to be gone. Their industrial capacity will be gone. We will have no way of regaining it again. And unless we reinstitute tariffs and protect our industries, everything is going overseas. I talked to a fellow in the sheet metal business this last weekend who told me that, you know, he's the fellow who goes out and gets jobs for the sheet metal company that he works for, fairly good-sized company. And when he talks to producers, they say, can you beat the price from China? And he said, there's no way we can beat it. And they say, sorry, we're taking our business to China. And the only jobs that they have are small jobs. And, of course, there are enough of them for now. But he looks into the future, and his company will be gone, as will all of our production capacity. This is what the Americans don't understand, and this is not happening by accident, is it, Bob?
No, it's not. And, you know, you use the word, I fear that this is going to happen. I'll guarantee it's going to happen. They passed the point of no return approximately 4.5 years ago, and it's over. I mean, it is in motion, and there is no stopping it. And what's going to happen is America and then the world will have depression. And we are going to have that. You know, people say, well, how do I defend myself? Well, for those of you who have lots of money, you can buy U.S. Treasuries. For those of you who would like to get real assets, then you'd buy gold and silver-related assets. And I have no other offering than that. And I've been in the financial business for almost 46 years. And I was a stockbroker for 28 years. And I see real, real trouble looming ahead. This year is not going to deteriorate as quickly as many, including myself, have anticipated because interest rates have remained abnormally low, and that's because the 10-year or the longer-dated U.S. securities won't go down in value and the yields won't go up. And that's because two things are happening. There's a flight to quality, which is also not only to treasuries, but also to gold and silver-related assets. And there's so much money out there that the Fed has created, and other governments too, that the professionals are now starting to run for safety. And, of course, they'll buy the American 10-year treasury note. And so that's what's happening out there, and that's why interest rates won't go up.
Well, of course, the thing is, though, Bob, is the dollar continues to fall. You put your money into treasuries, but the value of investment is going down. And no matter what you do, the value of your investment is going to go down if the dollar falls and you're invested in treasuries. Isn't that true?
That's true, but, you know, there are people, let's say, with $1 million, and they don't want to put it all in gold and silver-related assets. And so they might hold $300,000 to $500,000 in treasuries. Because they want, you know, that kind of liquidity. You know, people just don't understand sometimes.
Hold that thought right there, Bob. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, this evening, Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster. And if you're out there, why, give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Bob Chapman is one of the best-informed people in the country, which is why we enjoy having him on here as a guest to get his ideas of what's taking place and certainly the historical perspective of what's happening. So we were simply commenting that, you know, people who are invested in treasuries, and they may give security, but then as the dollar continues falling, why, the value of the money you put in there is losing purchasing power. And even though you may be making an interest rate of, what, 6 or 7% a year, if the dollar is falling 10% a year, why, and you're going to have to pay income tax on that 7% you're getting, you're still going behind.
Well, it's a complicated thing, but to put it in simple language, it's this. What you say is true. The dollar is going to go down in value. It has previously. It's just recently rallied over the last several months. And then you have the inflationary factor, which our government lies about. Inflation is 10.5% by my reckoning. And the government says it's like 3%. And so if you're getting 4%, which is approximately what the 10-year Treasury note is paying, you're a super loser, no matter which way you cut it. And so you say to yourself, where do I go? Well, my answer is gold and silver-related assets. And, you know, that's what I tell people to do. And I do that for myself as well, of course. And I believe that if you stick with it for the long run, you're going to be able to retain your buying power. Using 1929 and the early 1970s as examples, we're looking at a correction in the stock market, probably of 60%. We're looking at a correction in real estate of anywhere between 30 and 60%, depending upon where you live and how much the property that you have has already gone up. We're looking at higher interest rates eventually as people flee paper. Now, that flight is already taking place, as I just mentioned. And, of course, that was exacerbated by the fact in Europe that the French and Dutch refused to approve the European Constitution. That kind of added fuel to the fire. And just recently, gold has broken out in a powerful way against several major currencies, including the euro. So the game is on, and it's the only place you can go to. And I've been doing this since 1960. I've been through all of these cycles and all of these markets, and I know it's going to happen, and it's not going to be nice. And that's why when I'm on these programs, I tell everybody, kill your credit card debt. Get rid of your revolving debt. Pay off your vehicles, because there's a good chance next year one of you won't be employed, and hopefully you can make your house payments, because that's where we're headed.
All right. Well, tell us what's happening as far as it's certainly the impact of oil going up. Now, oil is up to $60. They're even talking about oil going to $70, $80, $100 a barrel. What impact is that going to have on our economy, on the price of the goods that we buy, on the price of things that are plastic?
Well, inflation is going to continue to go higher, and our government, which lies about just about everything.
Well, that's all right there for just a moment, Bob. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Bob Chapman. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question for Bob, I don't know anybody who knows more about what's going on. He's been at this for, well, going back to 1960. He started even a couple of years before I did. And, of course, he's seen so much of these cycles we've gone through over and over again. And he feels that the stock market is going to fall considerably. He feels that the housing market is going to fall considerably. And he feels that a lot of people out there who have jobs today are going to lose those jobs, and if they are in debt, they stand to lose their homes or lose those large items like their car that they are paying off. And his suggestion is to get out of debt. But if you'd like to talk to Bob, our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And I was asking Bob about the price of oil going up, but how much of the increase in the price of oil represents a real increase in the price of oil, and how much of it reflects the fall in the value of the dollar, so that actually the Arabs are not getting that much more for their oil?
Well, they are not getting that much more for their oil. The price of everything has gone up except oil, and the oil has in the last couple of years. But prior to that, they were getting cheated, actually. And, soda pop, water, everything you can think of has gone up more than oil has even thus far. And, you know, oil is also a natural resource. And most people do not understand that when the flight to quality away from fiat money in a fiat stock market, in a fiatly created real estate market takes place, people go to other places. Some of them go to treasuries, which you and I have just discussed, and they are not that safe. So we get gold and silver related assets, but we also have commodities. And that's a tricky field, and you only do that with professionals, and you have to have help. You can't do it yourself. But I wrote an article about 10 years ago because I saw all of the biggest powerful money in the world, the Rockefellers, the people who were involved at the top in the Council on Foreign Relations Trilateral Commission, and particularly the royal families of Europe. When commodities were down, they were buying and buying and buying mines and production and so on and so forth. And, of course, oil is one of them. And they're all going to continue to go higher. In fact, with copper, it's 167 a pound, which is relatively a new high, not for many years as it traded there. And they might shut down Asarco's mine in Arizona, which would make things even more difficult and the price go higher. But what I'm getting at here, too, is that people will go to commodities as a haven because they're a thing. They exist. They're finite. They must be used at some point in the future. And so oil, yes, is probably going to go up into the low 70s soon, probably before the end of the year. And like Henry Kissinger and said at the Bilderberger meeting, which is recently held in Germany, and James Baker III, who has been in oil all his life, both said oil is going to $150 a barrel.
Well, now, of course, Bob, if oil really gets that high, people are not gonna have, they're going to have to pay, to drive their car. They're not going to have money for other things. Their money's going to be going to gasoline and the maintenance of their car rather than buying all these luxury items they're getting. Is that a real factor? Will that be deflationary and mean there'd be less money to pay for things, cutting back on buying so much?
Well, first of all, it is going to take purchasing power away from purchasing other things. At the same time, we don't know what the Fed is going to do. Are they going to create an additional $2 or $3 or $4 trillion a year? They may do that. So you'd have stagflation instead of deflation. And that is what at least Alan Greenspan, who goes out of office in January, has said he's going to continue to do. I mean, the amount of M3 and other forms of credit that he has created, a colossal, never in the history of mankind has anything like this ever happened. And of course the public is totally ignorant of this because they don't know anything about it. I mean, you know, they just don't understand. And it's not complicated, it's just that our media and our schools don't even tell them.
But of course if they turn on the printing presses and massively inflate the dollar, it'll destroy the bond market, won't it?
Yes, it will. And it will ultimately destroy all fiat currencies, which almost all currencies are fiat.
So that doesn't really give people much of a choice of where they're going to be able to invest and invest for the future. And ladies and gentlemen, you better start thinking now about what you're going to do, because we're in very difficult times. We'll be right back here with Bob Chapman. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening, Bob Chapman. And, of course, we're talking about really what's going to happen. And, of course, Bob is suggesting that the Fed may very well just continue increasing the money supply. Have they been increasing the money supply this last few years in a rather dramatic fashion?
Well, the last couple of years it's been about 7%. But they also are extending tremendous amount of credit to the banking system. And for people who get the International Forecaster, each week I put in there what the increases or decreases, seldom is there a decrease, of money is lent out by banks for securities loans, general loans, derivatives, in all of those internal factors. And that rate of increase in all of those different areas, real estate, etc., that lending increase since last year is averaging around 17%.
In other words, that's different than the creating money. What they're doing is creating credit and the ability
exactly.
to borrow, and that is creating a massive then increase in the in liquidity.
That's right. And so when you look at M3, you got to look at bank loans at the same time, because M3 might have gone up $10 billion last week, and bank loans may have gone up $30 billion. They're masking what they're doing. And I keep on alluding and pointing it out in the International Forecaster, because people have got to see what they're doing. It's a little game they're playing. Actually, not little, it's very big. And it's going to blow up one of these days, and I don't think we're far from that.
All right, of course, it's a matter of timing, knowing exactly what's happening. Well, what's actually happening over in China? We know a few years ago why the Chinese were buying a good deal of gold. Is the average Chinese person now who suddenly has access to money buying gold and silver, or is he simply beginning to buy products and living the good life?
Well, I think they're doing both. The automobile production was, I think it was 233,000 units last month, and that's a fair amount. And the Shanghai real estate market just dropped 50% because they changed the rules on lending. I won't go into them here, but it dropped 50% in the last 3 months.
Now, this is the value of property in Shanghai dropped 50% in the last few months?
Mm-hmm. The Chinese, the government just changed the rules, you know. As you well know, it's a communist dictatorship. It's never changed. And, of course, the people here in America and Europe who are elitists, that doesn't mean anything to them.
Hold that thought here for just a moment. We'll be right back here with Bob Chapman. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Bob Chapman, who writes the International Forecaster newsletter. And Bob, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get hold of your newsletter and of course, get your viewpoint of what's going on.
Well, they can call toll-free to get a complimentary copy, and that number is 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. And we publish by email every week, and we have a hard copy that goes out as well twice a month. Those of you who want to look at my site on the Internet, that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. International Forecaster, FORECASTER.com. And for those who want to email a question that they think about later or whatever, we answer everybody. That address is international underscore. An underscore is like a dash, but it's lower down like a line on a line. So it's international underscore forecaster, FORECASTER, at Yahoo, YAHOO.com.
All right, fine. And if you're out there in the listening audience, you have a question for Bob or a comment, or give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you're calling from overseas, it's 831-464-8295. Well, I understand that the Chinese stock market has really dropped and dropped dramatically recently. And, of course, a lot of the people, the Chinese, have invested in the stock market. They thought they could play the game and make a lot of money, and they've actually lost money, and there's a lot of unrest in China, asking the government to step in and prop up the stock market. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And the market's been going down for the last couple of years. And it's because it was overpriced, but you know, they still have a command economy in China, and a command economy is a centralized communist economy, and it doesn't work. And so the whole banking system is essentially bankrupt. It's one of the reasons why they don't want to revalue, because if they do, they can't compete, because the banking system, their loans are probably about 55% unpayable. And Japan, of course, had a similar problem and still does, but they cleared up a good number of them. Japan was $1 trillion. They're down to about 250 to 300 billion, but the effect of that has been they're in the depression, and they've never gotten out since 1990, irrespective of what your media and what your stockbroker tells you. And so the same thing's going to happen in China, and they know that, but there's not much they can do about it, other than if there's an uprising, they shoot them.
Well, now, of course, one of the interesting things is Bank of America seems to be intent upon investing $2.5 billion in one of the Chinese communist government's development banks over there. Why would, you know, the Bank of America, great American corporation, invest $2.5 billion in a Chinese communist bank? That doesn't really make sense. Unless, of course, we go back through the years and we find that American bankers have always financed communism.
Well, there's your answer. They always have. And they've the banking community internationally, since the 12th century, has financed both sides of every war. And that's a fact. And, of course, many of you have seen the information that's come out on the Bush family and others who were instrumental from the United States and many from England in financing Adolf Hitler during the 1930s. And so there's nothing unusual about that. They play wherever they think they can get money and make money. And, you know, if they put $3.5 billion in, they figure if they can get it all back in 3 years, well, they can let the investment ride. Sometimes they get it back even quicker than that. And you also see merchant banks, investment banks going in and purchasing bad debts in China. There's been a lot of them, and in Japan as well, and in other countries. And they'll buy them for like 5 cents on the dollar and see if they can collect 10 or 15 cents on the dollar. And so they're happy to do that. And they make money doing that. And so they do a lot of things that we, as individuals, might think are strange. Well, they're not. They know what they're doing.
Well, I'm sure that they know exactly what they're doing. I just don't think that they want their stockholders, or specifically the American people, to realize that we've been financing communism since its very inception, and we financed them, the North Vietnamese, all during the Vietnam War. After all, how could we keep the enemy going? This little tiny country could not possibly stand up against America without constant infusions of money and supplies and weapons from Russia that was being financed by the United States. So it's the way the game is played. When are the American people going to wake up? When are they going to ask where the money is coming from to maintain all the insurgents over there in Iraq today who are killing the Iraqi people and killing the American troops? Because it costs money to run an insurgency. You don't do that simply, on petty chains and the pockets of the people who've come from Saudi Arabia and elsewhere to fight and die there for Allah. Well, Bob, you know, as we then see what's happening, it looks to me like India is going to be one of the major industrial centers of the world here in another decade. As America begins to decline in wealth and in prominence and influence, it would appear that India is really going to pick up. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, from today's viewpoint, you're right. But you also have to look at the general future. And the general future, essentially speaking, is not very good. And so when the United States has problems financially, the whole world's going to have them. And so there's not going to be a lot of exporting because there's not going to be a lot of buying. And they are, or they have been, growing on exports. And so consequently, under normal circumstances and with free trade, they probably do very well, just like China. But that's not going to happen in the future. There's going to be legislation in the United States. The people are going to be up in arms. And if they don't give them that kind of legislation, what's going to happen is they're going to have a revolution on their hands.
Well, I think that, you know, it's really, people have to understand that America is consuming about 80% of the cash of the entire world, and it's funneling in here in massive amounts. And, you know, China is actually funding, and they're playing a large part in funding our debt, as along with China, and I believe Great Britain. Is China and Japan still buying as many bonds as they have in the past? Are they beginning to cut back or to decrease their dollar holdings?
Well, Japan started cutting back this past March, and they've done very little purchasing over the last 3 months. And the Chinese have cut back their purchases as well, and they continue to accumulate dollars. But as I put in the international forecaster probably about 3 years ago, they started to begin to purchase as many things as they could outside their own country that they needed with dollars to get rid of them. And hence today we have the offer for Maytag and now
Unocal.
And so that's an intelligent thing for them to do. And it's going to continue. But if our Congress doesn't let them buy Unocal, then I would think that China would get quite upset, because we're telling them, it's okay for you to export to us, and it's okay for you to get the revenue and get those dollars and get those profits, but you only can spend them on U.S. Treasuries. That's only going to go on for so long. And I think they're coming to the realization, and this is the moment of truth here for the United States government. They've been bluffing, and it's like a game of poker. And, you know, it's showdown time, and that time will be in September. And they will not revalue, and that means that we are going to put on sanctions, which are trade tariffs, and that will be the beginning of tariffs affecting all countries, and I believe it will be the beginning of the catalyst that really sends the dollar down. But more importantly, it will really send gold and silver up in all other currencies, and that's already begun. So the game is now on. It's just that people just don't realize it yet. And you're not going to be want to be standing by with lots of real estate, because that's going to get hurt. I mean, it's guaranteed. They're just, sooner or later, those interest rates got to go up.
All right. Well, Chris, one of the things I noticed in your latest forecast was the fact that the IRS has changed the status of silver coins. And if you have held them for more than for a year, why, you no longer, if you sell them, you no longer pay 15% capital gains. You now pay 25 or 28, something like that. What in heaven's name is that all about?
Well, it's just about they want to inhibit the purchase of coins. You know, people, buy coins because silver coins, because they think the price of silver is going to go up. Well, that's true, and maybe it'll go up. I think it will. But the point is, they want to discourage people by doing that, by being punitive in the games. And so, you know, the thing to do is to buy silver coins, junk coins, and take delivery. It's not a taxable event until you sell them. And you may never sell them. You may have to use them in place of discredited dollars.
Well, now, what about silver bullion? Was that a carryover to bullion, or was that just before silver coinage?
Well, it's for bullion more than anything else. And that's what they want to discourage people buying and staying long silver.
All right, so they're going to use the income tax program to manipulate the commodity market. Would you say that would be the case?
Yeah, to some extent. There's more manipulation by the regulators, which are called the CFTC, than anybody else. It's governmental appointees who just do what the government tells them to do. And that's how they're able to rig parts of the commodity market.
And so they really don't want people to have anything of permanent value, of course. I remember what Alan Greenspan wrote back in 1965, where he said, you know, the whole idea of the welfare state is you cannot have anything of intrinsic value. That's the basis of the attack on gold. And, you know, if there was something that you could hold that would have intrinsic value, why, the welfare state would have to destroy it. Because the whole idea of the welfare state is to confiscate your wealth, and that is the basis of the attack on gold.
and then they redistribute it.
Right.
Just like this energy legislation or the new grant that they want to give. They want to give Israel another $1 billion. I mean, the whole thing is just incredible. Here we are paying these outrageous taxes, and it's still outrageous. And we get very little back for it. We get the Patriot Act. You know, we get people trying to pass legislation so that we can have a draft. Everything is anti-us.
Well, I'm very, very concerned that, of course, they are going to continue to expand this war. And this last week, while we've seen Dick Cheney say, oh, we've won the war, it's only a matter of time before we can come out. Donald Rumsfeld said we're going to be there for another 12 to 14 years. The president says, well, I'm not going to say when we're going to come out, but we're far better off to fight the terrorists over there in Iraq on the streets of Baghdad rather than on the streets of New York. And the trouble is there weren't any terrorists in Iraq before they attacked over there. That's the incredible thing.
Well, we created them. That's what we did. But we are building new bases over in Iraq, and therefore what they call detainees. Now, these people are captured, and because they're guerrilla insurgents, they are not considered to be prisoners of war. So they have just made room for an additional 16,000 that they're going to incarcerate and obviously torture. That's their modus operandi today. And I have a lot of that for the next issue. And I also cover these kidnappings, for lack of a better word. The Italian government has just brought charges against 13 people working for whom they thought was the CIA, when in fact it wasn't the CIA. It was another group that comes under the National Security Council that's run by Stephen Hadley and the old Iran-Contra felon, Elliot Abrams. It's called Task Force, or TF-121. And
Actually, they kidnapped this Muslim leader off the streets of Italy and sent him to Egypt to be tortured. Now, this is not what our troops are doing. This is what the intelligence agencies are doing. And those people should be sent to prison.
Task Force 121, and let me tell you who's involved in this. Delta Force, Green Berets, Navy SEALs, SAS, which is British Special Air Services, and British Special Boat Reserves Services, which is called SBS. And then they have various mercenary and ex-U.S. and foreign intelligence and special operations types, plus the Israeli Sayant Makal and the South African Risi Commandos, who they've hired as mercenaries. And to make it even worse, they're hiring as mercenaries private contractors who are now known as bounty hunters.
Well, I think
that's what our government does.
Well, I think it really behooves the average American to understand that when our government begins to break the laws of other countries and say, well, it's all right to do it because these are terrorists and we're going to prove it, we're going to have them tortured to death, every man and woman in America becomes less because men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. And people have forgotten that from the very inception of this Islamic terrorist movement, we have protected the people who've been financing this, and this is largely coming from Saudi Arabia and Pakistan, and we've all seen the pictures of the president holding hands with a Saudi prince this last couple of weeks.
Well, I also saw him holding hands with a guy named Gannon, too.
I know you haven't seen that.
Oh, yes, I did. Yeah.
Well,
he didn't. He wasn't. He held his hand and then he hugged him. I stand corrected. I have to give you the whole picture, and I have a picture of him hugging him.
Where did you get that?
One of the sites. I don't know, but I got it here.
All right, fine. Well, maybe you can email. I would love to see that. Well,
but
we will not go into who Mr. Gannon is, but any of our listeners can go
in there. Let me tell you.
What that?
I said we get some sick people in Washington.
Right, well, we've got real problems because our country's turned its back on God. And we've elected people who profess to be Christians, but we judge a person not by what he says, but what he does. Is he a man of integrity? Can we depend on what he says? Would he lie to the American people? Certainly we know that Bill Clinton lied. Why, he perjured himself and obstructed justice. And he carried out an illicit affair in the White House with one of the White House interns. But is that a greater crime than lying to the American people and taking us into a war that was planned long before the 9/11 attack? And anybody who doubts that has only go to the project for the New American website at newamericancentury.org. That's newamericancentury.org. Read the letters that this group, made up of Rumsfeld and Cheney and the others, in the Bush administration wrote in 1998 and again in 2000, demanding we go to war with Iraq. Well, Bob, we've got just 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program for us.
Well, I just came up with some new statistics on the casualties, and I'll have more on them, but there are over 7,000 dead.
I saw you that where are these figures coming from? Because we're not seeing these figures at all. The government says close to 1,900.
Yeah, well, it's 17-something. Also, these people, what they've done is they have got the, somehow, they have gotten the manifest for the military air transport service in their cargoes. And they traced them back and all of the stuff going into Dover, where they bring all the bodies. And they also have somehow been able to access the medical records at Landstuhl, which is in Germany, which is the hospital which they bring these wounded to. And the difference between the 1,700 and the 7,200 are the people who died en route and died when they got to the hospital. So what they're doing is lying by omission.
In other words, they're saying these people were killed in combat in Iraq, and I think that 1,900 is Afghanistan and Iraq, 1,700 in Iraq and 200 in Afghanistan, but be that as it may, what you're saying is that they put them on planes, they ship them overseas, and as long as they die on the plane or in the Landstuhl Hospital, then they were killed in Iraq. Is that what you're suggesting?
Exactly.
Well, that would be dishonest, though.
We're 50 yards ahead of everybody else. And you know that. You know, I take a long view of things, and we try to get the information up front. And, you know, sometimes, I sculpted out what was going to happen in the second war in Iraq a year after the first one. And everybody laughed at me. Well, they're not laughing now.
Well, there's very little to laugh at as we see the tragedy of this thing unfolding and the number of casualties, both American and Iraqis, increasing week after week after week. Well, Bob, you've got this 30 seconds to wrap up the program for us.
Well, again, I think you all should get out of debt and get some gold and silver-related assets and get yourself a free copy of the International Forecaster.
And what's the telephone number again?
The telephone number is 800-375-4188. 800-375-4188, and they'll send you a copy. And whether it's a hard copy or email, it runs around 35 pages weekly on the email version. And we cover everything, business, finance, economic, social, political issues all over the world.
And I really enjoy reading it. I look forward to reading it every week because I find things there that I don't find elsewhere, and we always check them out, and usually they're right on. Thanks so much, Bob. Always a pleasure.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course we appreciate the opportunity to have Bob with us. He always has fascinating information, and of course we do hope that many of you will want to get more information on what's really going on. We've put together a talk. It's called The Coming Financial Crisis. It's a talk that we gave 6 weeks ago in Southern California. It's available on DVD. That's The Coming Financial Crisis, to give you sort of an overview not only of what's happening of today, but the whole history of the world financial system. Now, we will be offering next week, we're putting together a booklet, and it's basically four newsletters we have written on the history of banking and the occult forces that are working within our financial system to transform the world and bring about a new world order and a new world religion. And those will be available. You can always inquire about them. We'll announce them when they're available. But fortunately, a woman who works on our staff has done a great job of compiling these four newsletters. And I'll tell you that you'll find information there you just won't find elsewhere. And going along with the DVD, you'll know more than, well, most of the people on the Federal Reserve System about what's really going on in the world today. So we certainly, if you'd like to know more about that, a DVD called The Coming Financial Crisis, our number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you want to understand the genocidal policies that are being carried out in America today, the DVD, None Dare Call It Genocide, that is a video, None Dare Call It Genocide, but the DVD is on fluoride toxicity, and of course it comes with a syllabus entitled The Hidden Agenda. That's The Hidden Agenda, and we recommend that syllabus because you'll actually see Dr. MacArthur's testimony as it was given before the House Appropriations Committee. You'll actually see the pages from the House Appropriations Committee report where Dr. MacArthur in 1969 asked for $10 million to create a new disease that never existed before, 1969, that he says, now for which there'll be no immune response. And some people think we shouldn't do that because it's a new method of mass killing, but we want the money anyway. And 10 years later, why, the first cases of AIDS appeared, we didn't recognize them until 1981, but they were there, they were dying. Did we create AIDS? Well, you want to see his testimony. And then there's so much information there about American foreign policy, about the National Security Study Memorandum 200, which, of course, calls for worldwide population control. The basis of American foreign policy is worldwide population control. And if you look in Botswana today, 40% of the pregnant women there, 42% of the pregnant women, are HIV positive. They're all going to die in Botswana. Now, that is either the greatest public health tragedy and failure of all time, or the most successful genocidal policy. You want to get our video, None Dare Call It Genocide. You want to get our DVD on the fluoride toxicity, and the syllabus goes along with that, because you need the documents to be able to discuss this intelligently with others. And certainly you'll want to get our DVD on the coming financial crisis. So much information. Please go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs there 5 hours a day on the Internet. You can listen to our programs on shortwave. But your job, your assignment, is to tell others about our program, because we need your help to get the truth out across America. I can only reach so many people, but you out there, the thousands of you who listen to this program, can reach others who can reach others. And so remember our number, 1-800-544-8927, our website, radioliberty.com. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but please remember to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so until, well, tomorrow evening, I guess it'll be a Thursday evening, and then we'll be back with you once again. Dr. Stan saying good night, and may the Lord be with you.